how his mediagenic wife decorated their Oak Brook mansion, all were avidly covered by columnists like Regine Mauger. And when invitations were issued for tonight's party, everyone in Chicago's small media pond was anxious to find the silver-edged ticket in the mail. Regine and the other gossip columnists weren't of much interest to Trant tonight. I recognized the Speaker of the Illinois House and a couple of other state polls in the group close to him, and had a feeling that the man he was talking to most was another businessman. Regine, peevish at being stiffed, made a big show of inspecting the hem of her black satin trousers to show me I'd torn them or scuffed them or something. As I pushed my way through the melee toward a corner of the bar, I heard her say to her counterpart at the Sun-Times, "Who is that very clumsy woman?" I edged my way to the wall behind Sal's horseshoe mahogany bar, since my assistant Mary Louise Neely and her young protege Emily Messinger had come with me. I knew I was in for a long evening. In her current manic state, Emily would ignore any pleas to leave much before 1 a.m. It wasn't often she did something that made her peers jealous, and she was determined to milk the evening to the limit. Like most of her generation, Emily was caught up in lacy mania. When I said she and Mary Louise could come as the guest my ticket entitled me to, Emily turned pale with excitement. She was leaving for France next week to go to a summer language camp, but that was boring compared to being in the same room with Lacey Dowell. "The mad virgin," she breathed theatrically. "Vic, I will never forget this until my dying day." Lacey got the nickname from her lead in a series of horror flicks about a medieval woman who supposedly died in defense of her chastity. The films had a cult status among Generation Xers. Their deadly seriousness turned them into a kind of campy self-satire. But their real audience was Emily and her teenage friends, who slavishly copied Lacey's hairstyle, her ankle boots with their crossed straps, and the high-necked black tank tops she wore off the set. When I got to the end of the bar near the service entrance, I stood on tiptoe to try to spot Emily or Mary Louise, but the crowd was too dense. Sal had moved all the bar stools to the basement. I leaned against the wall, making myself as flat as possible, as harassed waitstaff rushed by with hors d'oeuvres and bottles. Murray had moved to the far end of the bar from me, still with the woman in silver gauze. Sal stopped briefly by me again, holding a plate of smoked salmon. "I have to stay here till the last dog dies, but you don't. Go on home, Warshawski." I took some salmon and explained morosely that I was waiting on Mary Louise and Emily. Murray maneuvered his way across the bar with his companion and put his arm around Sal. "Hey, thanks for opening up the glow to this mob scene. I thought we ought to celebrate it someplace authentically Chicago." He kept an arm around Sal in a protective hug and introduced her to his companion. "Sal Bartel, one of the truly great Chicago stories. Alexandra Fisher, one of the truly great Chicago escapees. And you know V.I. Warshawski."
"Yes, I know Vic."
Sal extricated herself from Murray.
"Stop showing off, Murray. Not all of us are swooning because you sat in front of a camera for 15 minutes.
Murray threw back his head and laughed. "That's what makes this a great town. But I was talking to Alex. She and Vic were in law school together."
"We were?" The name didn't ring a bell.
"I've changed a little." Alex laughed, too. Squeezed my hand in a power shake. Her hair, dyed a kind of magenta, was cut close to her skull at the sides and slicked back on top with something like Brill cream, except, no doubt, pricier. Before I could probe, a young man in a white collarless shirt murmured a few apologetic words to Alex about Mr. Trant. She waggled her fingers at Murray and me and followed the acolyte toward the power center. The wizened gossip columnist, still hovering on the perimeter, stopped her for a comment, but Alex was sucked into the vortex and disappeared.
"So, what did you think, V.I.?"
Murray scooped half the salmon from Sal's platter and downed it with a mouthful of beer. It was only then that I realized he'd shaved his beard for his television debut. I had watched the beard go from fiery red to auburn to gray-flecked in the years he and I had collaborated and competed on Financial Scandal in Chicago, but I'd never seen his naked jaw before. Somehow it made my heart ache. Foolish Murray, anxiously decking himself for the media gods. So I said brusquely, "She has beautiful deltoid definition."
"Of my show, Warshawski."